live, and very grateful to be part of this program and to continuously work on myself to become a better person.
Can we record you? Would you like to wear this?
I can wear it.
You don't have to.
Or hold it, or hang it, or something.
I'm going to wear this cool fucking necklace now. Check this out, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. All right, so I'm going to start from the beginning, I guess. Childhood. I don't remember too much of it. I do remember not feeling right within my own skin, just like most of us. I didn't feel okay or I belonged with the people that I was around, primarily my family. My family liked to play video games and liked to stay inside. I liked to be outside and play in the mud. They liked spicy food. I didn't like spicy food. I was pretty sure I was adopted until a very short time ago. But I look way too much like my family to not belong to them. And so I started with attention-seeking, self-destructive behavior very early on. At the age of 5, I stapled my leg with one of those construction staple guns. I was wearing my favorite overalls, too. I'll never forget it. They had Pooh Bear on them, and I wore them every fucking day. And I threw a fit if I didn't get to wear them because I loved them. I felt cool in them. And, so I sat at the kitchen table. And there were 6 people in my family, so 4 kids, 2 adults, and getting 6 people ready to go was a time and a half. And there's 1 bathroom, so you want to talk about learning some patience early on, try that. Don't try it. It sucks. But we were going to some party or something, and my house was always under construction as a child because we bought a really old house, and we just always had to keep fixing things. But there's this staple gun sitting on the table, and I remember looking at it thinking, I wonder what that would feel like to shoot that into my body, because I'd watched them shooting it into the wall. And so I just tried it, and I sat there, and there's blood pouring down my leg, and everybody's out the door, and my mom comes running back in, like, what the fuck are you doing? Let's go. And I got blood all over me. I'm just sitting there, like, not knowing what to do with myself. So that happened. Kindergarten, I stabbed myself with a pencil because I was super angry at my kindergarten teacher. She gave me detention, which meant you don't get nap time, and don't tell a kindergarten that you don't get nap time, because I was pissed. Because I'm in there with the lights off, and I have to do homework while everybody's trying to take a nap. And the reason I got detention was because she was doing this raffle thing where if you go to Chuck E. Cheese, you get coins and you bring them in and donate them or something. Then you get a prize at the end of the week if you brought in the most coins. And so on a Friday evening, I grabbed a bunch of coins from the basket and came back in Monday morning and said, oh, I got all these coins. Look at me. But we couldn't afford to go to Chuck E. Cheese, so I wasn't able to obtain those on my own. So I felt the need to steal them and then return them, acting like I'm a good person. So all this addictive behavior happening very early on, just to try and kind of get outside of myself. I do, like I said, remember not feeling okay within my skin. So I found any and every way to escape from that. Some people call it fantasy, I call it escape. So I read a lot of books and I watched a lot of movies. I didn't have a lot of friends growing up, so I spent a lot of time hanging out with myself in my head, which is not a good place to be. And I read a lot of books like Crank and Tweak and A Million Little Pieces. And I watched movies like Trainspotting and Requiem for a Dream. That's the generation I grew up in. And within those forms of reading and watching those movies, it was a glorified way of looking at addiction. And those were the parts of that that I saw, because in the books and the movies, they do show the downfalls, but I wasn't focused on that. And being that I just wanted to find a way to feel better about myself, because I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere that I was, I've heard a lot of people say that I didn't plan on becoming a drug addict, but I saw those things and read those things, and I wanted to feel like that, because I didn't understand why I didn't feel okay with myself, but reading those passages or seeing those movies where those people felt great. Anybody seen Requiem for a Dream? Well, there's this scene where she does her stuff and then this girl looks in the mirror and she's completely naked and you can tell in her eyes that she just feels so at peace with herself and feels like she is just the most beautiful thing on that earth. And I wanted to know what that felt like, because I didn't understand why I felt like the bottom of the earth always. So I went down that path. I started experimenting with things around the age of 9 behind the medicine cabinet because I could swallow a pill before my brother, who was 3 years older than me, could not. And I thought that was the coolest thing ever because my mom was trying to give us Benadryl because we both had poison ivy. And we didn't have the liquid form and all we had was the pills. And my mom gave me one and I just chucked it down real quick and he could not get it down. And she said, your sister can do it. Why can't you? And I was like, I took that as an excuse to go into the bathroom and try every color pill that I could find. So, very young, experimenting with things, and just kind of trying to figure out how they affected my body. And then from that point on, I was very fascinated with what they were actually doing to me. So science and chemistry and biology were really huge interests of mine, trying to actually figure out the chemical imbalance within me, because I was very sure that I could fix it myself. Because I figured out the problem, and a few of these things did better for me than I could do without anything else. So the substances were the answer. And I carried that mentality all the way for a long time. School always usually came easy to me. High school was really no problem. I was an ABC student. The only reason I got C's was because I didn't show up or I was sleeping, and it was usually first and second period. So I did graduate high school, and then 2 weeks after I graduated, I moved down with my dad in Virginia because he was in the military, and my dad wasn't really around a lot in my childhood, but I did know that he was in the military, and I thought maybe he could straighten me out. I knew I was going down a dark path, and that possibly he could find some way to fix me, and that didn't work. So I went to community college while I lived with him for 2 years, and then I went to Richmond, Virginia, the city, straight in the middle of the city, and spent the rest of my college not really sure. I graduated high school, I graduated community college, I graduated college, but I couldn't tell you a damn thing that I learned. I wasn't really there. I honestly don't know. I got my associate degree in science because I was really fascinated with all that side of it. And then when I got to a university, I tried the first semester to do pre-med, and my addiction just took hold, and I could not get through it. So I switched to English because that's easy, and I love reading. So I did graduate with a bachelor's in English, but like I said, I don't remember anything that I learned there. Spent the next 2-3 years still in the city. Addiction just took a real hard turn at that point. I met a boy, fell in love, started doing really terrible things, and living on the street. It got nasty. It took us where addiction takes us. So towards the end of that road, I spent, we were bouncing around North Carolina, Virginia, Florida for a little bit, back up here with my mom for a week. And a lot of the reason I started bouncing around is because anywhere I ended up, within a few weeks, somebody told me I had to go to rehab. And I said, okay, later, I'm moving a couple states away. So, because that was just easy. Packing up and moving was no problem, because I knew even if I had to sleep on the street, I didn't have a problem. I did know I had some sort of problem. I didn't think it was a drug problem. I was pretty sure it was a brain problem. And I just kept trying to figure out a perfect balance of substances to fix that. And as we all know, because we're sitting here, that does not work. So I did end up coming back up here to live with my mom. I left that boy. And the reason I left is because we moved back in with his mom, and I spent 5 weeks in a room with white walls, nothing on the walls except for on the door. It had that. It was around that time where that Keep Calm, Carry On poster was a big thing. And try staring at a wall, at blank white walls with that for 5 weeks, doing absolutely fucking nothing, and being dope sick and getting high every other day, or just trying to stay afloat, not working. I literally did not leave this room for 5 weeks, and it was a bad turn mentally. But it did bring me enough courage to text my mom and say, I need help. Come get me. And she's up here. I'm down in Virginia. It's an 8.5-hour drive. I know, because I've done it a ton of times. And I called my mom that night, and I said, you need to come get me. It was a Wednesday night. And she said, hey, my car is not all that great. Can I come get you on Sunday? And I said, Mom, I'm going to be done. I'm going to be dead by Sunday if you don't come get me. She was there by 6 o'clock in the morning. I had my bags packed. I left, came up here, and I didn't go to rehab because she didn't force me. She thought that her coming to get me would be maybe enough. She did want me to go see some sort of therapist, so I did end up going to drug therapy for a little bit here and there, but I was still using whenever I came back. And, you know, alcohol is just as powerful as a drug as any other real substance. So I spent a lot of my time those first couple years here driving back and forth from the city and just going to shows and seeing concerts. And music is a huge part of my life because that was always something that I could take me out of myself. And it still is today. I love going to shows, and it, I feel like, honestly, it's part of my spiritual conditioning to be in a crowd of people screaming and sweating and jumping up and down and just losing my mind for a little bit in a healthy environment. But before, when I would go to shows, I'd sit in the back at the bar and just kind of fade away until it was time to leave and then drive an hour and a half home. Whereas now I pack myself in the front and I'm fully involved, and it's like an entirely new spiritual experience to be standing there with all these people just screaming our heads off, having a blast. It is a huge part of what I do in my life today, and a lot of people can't do that. And it took me 6 months before I could go to another show. And there's a lot of venues in Pittsburgh that I can't go to, or I can't walk up to the bar. I used to go by myself. Like, I make rules about my life today. I go with somebody who is in recovery. I always just go straight up to the front. I don't get anything but water, and I hardly really go to the bar. If I absolutely have to, then sometimes I'll ask somebody to go get me a water. I set rules and regulations for myself today because I'm afraid to get high. I don't want to die today because I do love my life. I love the people I've surrounded myself with. I love these rooms and everything they've done for me. Whenever I came in, so let me backtrack how I got into the rooms. Like I said, alcohol is just as powerful as a drug as any other substance. So that took me down a real dark path. That boy that I left in Virginia, also a year after I came back, we were still together. He thought so anyway. But he went to California to go to rehab and tried to get clean. He died in a Rite Aid bathroom, and they tried to call me, and I did not pick up. And I blamed myself for his death for a very long time. And so after he passed away, I blamed that on myself, and I took that and just ran with it, and nothing else mattered at that point. Like, my dignity was gone. Everything that I owned was gone. Everything that I ever cared about, I just let go to the wind because it did not matter anymore. So that was August 5th of 2016 that he passed away. My clean date is August 10th of 2016. No, it's not. I'm sorry. August 5th of 2016, he passed away. August 10th of 2017 is my clean date. So it took me 1 year and 5 days to get my shit together, to bring me to the gift of desperation that we talk about. What it was I came home one night, and my mom was sitting there, and I poured myself a drink, and she asked me what I'm doing to myself. And, you know, she had asked me this many times before. Growing up, even, my parents were big on what the fuck is wrong with you. And I didn't have any answers because I did not know, and I was trying to figure it out, and I was trying to figure out a way to fix myself so that they didn't have to ask me that anymore. But so she looked at me the way that she looked at me this night over and over and over again all my life. And just for some reason at this point, I couldn't take it anymore. I was done. I felt it. I felt this, like, just defeat come over me. And I had heard about meetings. I didn't really know too much about them other than what the general public knows, is that it's a cult. And that's where you find the drug dealers, and that's where you find the drugs. So I wasn't allowed to go to NA, but I was allowed to try AA. So I looked up the meeting list online, and I found an AA meeting not too far from me. But I showed up, and it's in my area. It's the biggest meeting, and it's still the biggest meeting to this day. So I drove up to this meeting. There's probably at least 50 to 80 people standing outside this church, smoking cigarettes, cutting up, laughing and whatnot. And I pull in. And I did have some sort of understanding of higher power, or at least something that I knew I was telling foxhole prayers to, or asking just for help whenever I just could not do it anymore. But I sat in my car before I even opened the door. I said, dude, if there's not a single person in there that I don't know, that I don't feel welcomed, or if I don't understand a damn thing that they're saying, I'm out. I'm going to tell my mom I tried it, and that's it. I'm leaving. I'm going back down south and figuring it out, because I just can't fuck with this anymore. And I'm sorry, there's kids around. I swear. A lot. Yeah. So they know. So I open the door. I walk into this meeting. It's an NA meeting, first of all. So this girl comes, like, running up to me, her arms open, and usually I wear a hat, and I almost wore a hat today because I don't know any of you guys. And for my first year clean, I wore a hat with my bill down and my arms are crossed, and I just had this look on my face like, don't fucking come talk to me. I don't want nothing to do with you, because I didn't want nothing to do with me. And walked into that room, this girl comes up to me, open arms, and freaked me out a lot. And this group of girls took me up, and we all sat at a table, and I said, I really don't know what I'm doing here. And they said, it's okay, none of us really did. And I just kind of sat and listened to the meeting. I didn't know what they were talking about. I do remember one of the topics was complacency, but I didn't know what that word meant at that time. I didn't know what a lot of these words meant. I didn't know what a spiritual principle was. I was pretty sure it was like a token you had to go find out in the woods or something, and like collect them like Pokemon. No, that's not it. I asked somebody if a home group was a meeting that they had at their house, because I was like, I'm not bringing a bunch of fucking people I don't know at my house. My mom would kill me. No, it was not like that. So they taught me all these words and this new lingo and jargon that I soon fell in love with, and it's like the only language that I know today, because it's the only language that I feel a part of and like understand and can relate to people with. But what they read was the Who is an Addict reading. I mean, that's the first reading that they read at a meeting. And there's that line in there that says, we live to use and use to live. And I remember weeks on end before I could not stop anymore. And I knew I wanted to, but didn't know how to do it, asking myself, why am I trying so hard to live, but just trying to die at the same time? And that line, like, I just kept repeating that all over the meeting. And that's basically all I remember. My first year is really blurry. It was just kind of like a haze coming into these rooms, but so grateful for it. And so walking out of that room, I knew Also, there was a girl in there that I knew from high school. We didn't really talk. She sat in front of me on the bus. She was super loud and obnoxious. I do remember that about her. But when she said her name in the meeting, I immediately knew who she was. And after the meeting, she did come up to me and talk to me. Excuse me. So I did feel welcomed. I did understand some of what you guys were saying, and I did know somebody in that room. So whether it was a foxhole prayer or not, it was answered coming out of that room. I knew that something was at work greater than myself that was not me. So I went out to eat with these guys and guys and girls. At that point, like first coming into recovery, I was really afraid of men. I didn't really want anything to do with you. I didn't really want anything to do with women either in the first few months. But somebody told me guys stick with the guys and girls stick with the girls, and I took that to heart because I knew what I did with guys. In active addiction, I was very all over the place. Part of the reason also I came into the rooms is I got pregnant, and I, to this day, could not tell you who the father was. I did not have the baby, and that is definitely the hardest decision I've ever had to make in my life. But when it happened, I knew that I couldn't even take care of myself, so how am I supposed to take care of another living human being? And that decision came with a lot of pain and a lot of heartache, but I've found through this program ways to deal with it and to come to terms with it. So moving on, recovery, pretty great. Like I said, it was pretty much a haze the first year or so. I do remember my 30 days clean, laughing so hard that I had milkshake coming out my nose, and I was pretty sure I was going to suffocate and die because I was laughing so hard. And my friends that I had acquired at that time are just laughing at me, and it was just a blast. I definitely thought I might suffocate, but I hadn't laughed that hard in all of my life. I didn't know what it was like to feel that belly laughter, to smile on a regular basis, to have people that I can call my friends, that I can call up on the phone and say, hey, how's your day? And they can ask me the same thing and actually care what's going on in my life. 90 days clean, me and my friends took a trip to New York, which I never thought. During Christmas time, which is beautiful, you get a chance to do that, fucking do it. It's cool. It's a lot. It's a long trip, but it was a good time. And then, you know, music, like I said, is another part of my life. I went to my first festival last year. Can't stop going to festivals now. And it sounds like an unhealthy behavior to put myself in that environment, but like I said, I do take people with me, and we actually set up camp, and then we immediately have a meeting, and then we go and enjoy the festival for a little bit. We come back later that night, eat dinner, and have a meeting again. We have a meeting when we wake up. Like, we make sure that we're spiritually fit. That's how I decide whether I can do things today, is how spiritually fit am I? Do I feel like I can make it out of this okay? Do I feel good enough to be around these types of things and not put myself in that? That being said, I do go to these things, but I don't, on the weekends, hang out with friends who are using. I know that's not a good thing. I don't have friends who are using because all my friends are in recovery. This is my life today. And I don't know where I would be without it. I definitely would not be trying to be a better person. The steps are fucking phenomenal. When I first came in, they told me to get a sponsor. At 30 days clean, I got a temporary sponsor. She came at me within the first few minutes of make a list of internal and external consequences of your using. And I said, fuck that. I'm not doing that. That's the hardest thing anybody's ever asked me to do. So I'm not doing that. So 6 months later, I end up with another sponsor, and she asked me to do the same thing. So I did do it that time. And since then, I've stuck with the same sponsor. I love her to death. I call her not as much as I should. But I am in a good state of mind today. I don't have to call her every single day, whereas whenever I was in early recovery, I did have to do that. I was living with my mom, who is not in the program, but she, it's not my deal to say whether somebody's an addict or not, but she's my mom, so I'm allowed to say she's fucking crazy. Love her. I got a time limit on her today. I spent 4 hours with her yesterday. I'm good for another month. But this program has taught me to be able to do that and to not just immediately lash out at every single thing that she says to me and come at it instead with spiritual principles and understanding and try to evaluate the way that I'm feeling feelings also. Dude, I didn't realize all that active addiction was just piling up all these feelings and that they would all just come flooding back whenever I got clean. And it was a lot that hit me at once and I could not process it. That's why I stayed away from guys. That's why I kept my head down and my arms crossed and I didn't want to talk to anybody. I just couldn't deal with how I was feeling. But I just kept coming back. I am a huge product of keep coming back because I didn't work steps until I had about 9 months clean. I didn't know what I was doing, just kind of floating in the wind. But I could tell that whatever you guys were doing was working for you, and I wanted a piece of that. So I just kept doing what I was told until I found my own way. And it is a whole lot of fumbling and bumbling. Even still to this day, I don't know a lot of what I'm doing. It's a lot of just for today's. And that was a huge thing that got me through. Even, you know, just for these 5 minutes, just for this hour, just for this half hour, just for this morning. It increasingly got bigger and bigger, but now I just stick with the day because that's all I can deal with. I can really only deal with what's happening in this moment. And because, I mean, the past is the past and the future is unknown. I saw a quote once. It was on like a swimming pool place. I don't know. It was the weirdest place on a billboard that said, we don't fear the unknown. We fear what we think we know of the unknown. And that's huge for me because I do. That's what I do. I project and I think and this is going to happen and that's going to happen and it never turns out that way. I can plan as much as I possibly want to, but it's never going to turn out exactly the way that I think it is because it's life. There are other factors. There are other people and thoughts and processes going on that are not just mine. As a kid, I was pretty sure the world revolved around me because through my eyes, when I was her age, that's all I could see was out of my eyes. And all these people coming up to me and telling me I'm a princess and shit. And I'm fucking, that's all I knew was what I saw out of my eyes. I didn't know that everybody else had eyes too and like saw the world out of their own. I was pretty sure they were all there for me. Yeah, I was a spoiled, privileged little white girl, for sure. And I think my not fitting in came in where my family is mostly guys. Like, I have all cousins that are guys. And then when I was 5 years old, my mom started seeing this guy, and he had a son and a daughter, and she became the other princess, and that just wasn't okay with me. But I love her. She's my sister. To this day, I will call her and live by that. To this day, she is still out there in South Carolina somewhere. I do pray for her every single time we circle up and say the Serenity Prayer. Because I want her to have this type of life. I want her to know that there is happiness to be found. It's in these rooms. That's the only place that I found it. I tried everything else. None of it worked. But this is where it's at. It's the greatest show on earth is what they say. And to me, I mean, that is what it is. So yeah, life is amazing today. Like I said, I'm learning how to have healthy relationships with my crazy mother, with my crazy friends. And I got blessed and lucky to come into this program with two other girls at the same time. And we are still best friends to this day. I don't see it happen like that very often. We are very tight-knit, but we do make it a point to make sure that any newcomer girl coming in has the opportunity to see that and know that it is possible. If you find one person in here that you relate to, fucking stick to them. Stick yourself in their back pocket and ride along. That's what I did. Like I said, those first 6 to 9 months, I wasn't working steps. I held on to that obsession to use for a very long time. So I could not just give it up. I could not give up the idea that maybe I could figure out a way to use successfully. But I know that's not true today. This is the way to do it, to live a clean and happy life. And it's amazing. I can't say enough about what this program's done for me. I love it every day, more and more and more. And I'm so excited to just continue with life in this way.
Thank you.